40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The mindset was the same. Go out there and have fun and compete. And I was a little nervous going into it. I think everybody was a little nervous, but you made it fun. You know, we were able to put on a show for the fans, and I hope everyone enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, Aaron. That's New York Yankees rookie slugger Aaron Judge, who put on a show for the fans in Miami, Florida, where he won Major League Baseball's annual home run derby contest. The 25-year-old Judge will be the starting right fielder for the American League later Tuesday night in Miami in the 88th annual All-Star Game. And joining me now here in Studio 22 to talk about the midseason classic is Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Sonny. It's nice to be here. Excited for the Midsummer Classic coming up tonight in Miami, Florida.
Dan, I can't resist this pun. You be the judge, Dan. What did you think of Aaron Judge winning the home run derby?
I should have my gavel and say, all rise for the judge. I mean, the fact, first of all, that in the early round, to just continue in the competition, he had to defeat the local first baseman from the Miami Marlins, Justin Bour, who actually is from Fairfax, Virginia, just outside the Beltway from Washington, D.C. He had to hit 23 home runs within the time limit because Bour hit 22.
Mm.
So that was the first hurdle. And then winning against Miguel Sano from the Minnesota Twins and the Dominican Republic, a great power hitter in his own right, was really impressive. And Judge has been the biggest story of the baseball season so far, so it's only fitting that he won the home run derby with a few over 500-foot shots. Pretty amazing.
Aaron Judge leads Major League Baseball with 30 home runs at the All-Star break in his rookie season. Dan, who are some of the other young stars in Miami this evening?
Well, the Los Angeles Dodgers, they're one of the premier teams in Major League Baseball. Even though they've been really a strong team, let's go back 10 years. They've been a strong team. They have not won the World Series. They have not even made it to the World Series. They have a ton of money behind them. One of their key ownership figures is the NBA star Magic Johnson, who was down there and waiting to see how they would do. And the Dodgers, if they are going to make a run at the World Series this year, they have all the pieces in place. And one of them is the rookie Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger is the son of a former New York Yankees pitcher, Clay Bellinger. He didn't even make the Dodgers roster out of spring training, which was kind of a surprise, but not so much of a surprise when you think about the fact that the Dodgers are an established team and they have strong players at almost all of the positions. Couple injuries. Bellinger comes up. His first game is April 25th, and he goes on a run in the end of April, May, and June, winds up with 25 home runs going into the All-Star break for the Dodgers, who are in first place in the National League West. They have the best record in baseball, and they look like they're going to run away with the chance to win the National League. So Judge and Bellinger, two rookies, the running away with the Rookie of the Year vote, I would say, the biggest story so far.
Judge and Bellinger both belting home runs this season. The home run, also a very big story in baseball, Dan. I was checking my stats before the show started. More than 1,100 home runs hit just in the month of June. the most for any single month in Major League Baseball history. Players, fans wondering, is the baseball itself juiced? Is it being manufactured differently? Your thoughts, Dan?
Well, when you look at a player like Aaron Judge, who's built more like a National Football League player, or some countries who love rugby, you know, South African rugby star, even maybe an NBA forward, you know, Karl Malone of the 1980s Utah Jazz. Aaron Judge is a huge man. And you look at him, he hits the ball 500 feet, and he's not even, doesn't even look like he's swinging that hard.
That's right.
So there's a combination. It's the combination of the athletes are in great shape. The stigma of striking out is as low as it's ever been. If you go back to the days of Mickey Mantle and the New York Yankees, and before that, Babe Ruth and the New York Yankees, or even the home run king for a long time before Barry Bonds came along, Hank Aaron, those guys didn't really want to strike out. They would take maybe two big swings and then protect against striking out on the third pitch that, you know, maybe they would hit a single or foul the ball off to keep the at-bat alive. Guys are striking out 200 times a year, and they're getting $25 million contracts if they're able to hit 40 homers. So here are Judge's three-quarters of the way to 40 homers halfway through the season. So the stigma of hitting home runs is down. And there's definitely been some analysis that every once in a while, Major League Baseball decides that they're going to tweak the way the baseball is constructed. It's a really small thing, but some of the pitchers this year are complaining that the balls are a little bit harder, they're wrapped a little bit tighter, the seams on the ball, the balls all have stitches. If you've ever had an injury and had to have the doctor stitch you up, the baseball has all of these stitches. And the stitches are, the pitchers are saying the stitches are closer to the surface of the ball than usual, which makes it harder for the pitchers to manipulate the pitches, and it's easier for the ball to fly through the air with less resistance. So it's a combination of all those things. The players are probably in better shape than they've ever been. The ball is slightly different. They're not worried about strikeouts, and the ball's flying out of the park.
The starting pitcher for the National League All-Stars tonight is Max Scherzer, one of five Nationals to be voted to the All-Star game. The leading vote-getter, Bryce Harper, the right fielder for the Nationals. Your thoughts on the Nationals so far this season, Dan?
So, Voice of America's studios here down by the National Mall in Washington, D.C., just about a 15 or 20-minute walk away from the Nationals Park. And the Nats are one of these teams kind of like the Dodgers. The Dodgers knocked the Nats out of the playoffs last year. The Nats, I think, have the best combined record going back to 2012, which was the first good season that the Nationals had after the franchise moved to Washington from Montreal. Going back to that season of 2012, the Nats, I think, have the best record in baseball all those years combined. And the question is, the Nats have five All-Stars. The Dodgers have six. Are either of these teams going to be able to make it to the World Series this year? The Washington Nationals have strong players. One of their best players didn't even make the All-Star game. Anthony Rendon is the third baseman. One of the local columnists argued that he is the best player in the National League. How is he not even on the field in the All-Star game? The Nats have to shore up a couple of things. They need some better pitching out of their last couple of starting pitchers, and they need to figure out what's going on with their bullpen. A lot of analysts think that in the next couple of weeks, when some of the teams that are on the bubble start fading, that Washington is trying to engineer a trade to get a really strong relief pitcher. Kind of like what happened last year. If you look at last year's baseball season, Cleveland Indians and the Chicago Cubs made it to the World Series, but they made two very important trades, even though they already had good teams, two very important trades in July, with Andrew Miller coming to Cleveland from the New York Yankees and Aroldis Chapman going to Chicago, also from the Yankees. It gave the Yankees a ton of prospects and really catapulted those two teams into the World Series. The teams were already good. The Nats are already good, but they need to get a little bit better.
Dan, Hispanic players are making a big impact in recent years in Major League Baseball. Can you tell our VOA listeners about the Hispanic presence in the 88th annual All-Star Game?
Well, just looking at the rosters, the majority of the Hispanic players, the players from Latin America, are in the American League. You have the Kansas City Royals catcher, Salvador Perez from Venezuela. Gary Sanchez, who's the Yankees prospect catcher from the Dominican Republic. You have Jose Altuve, who is the diminutive Houston Astros second baseman. He's arguably the best all-around hitter in baseball, somebody who can get on base. He can get singles, doubles, triples, home runs, steal bases. He's really an impressive player. I think he's under 5 feet, 5 inches tall. You have him next to Aaron Judge, who is this monster. It's a really great thing to see. Jose Ramirez from the Dominican Republic. He's the guy who's been leading the Cleveland Indians, the American League representative in the World Series last year. He's had an outstanding season building on his year last year. While some of the Cleveland Indians players have faltered a bit, he's been the steady guy that's managed to help them stay afloat, where they're the leading team in the American League Central, even though if they were in another division, they wouldn't be in first place. Luis Severino, who is a young pitcher for the New York Yankees from the Dominican Republic. Irvin Santana from the Dominican Republic, big power hitter. Nelson Cruz from the Seattle Mariners. It's a wide range of representation. Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, and a few Cuban players mixed in. Actually, last year we talked about the influence of the Cuban players on Major League Baseball and maybe the thawing tensions between the U.S. government and the Cuban government. But looking at the roster of the All-Star Game, not as many Cuban players as you might expect.
Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Sonny. Glad to be here talking baseball.
Now let's go to the Midwestern U.S. city of Silvis, Illinois, where George McNeely has a preview of this week's John Deere Classic golf tournament.
The PGA Tour began its run in the heartland of America, the Quad Cities, in 1971. And this week, the tournament celebrates its 20th year as the John Deere Classic, having moved to land donated by Deere & Company, whose CEO is Sam Allen.
We've always emphasized this is not the Quad City Open sponsored by John Deere. It's the John Deere Classic. So the brand is first and foremost, and it's got to end up shining the brand, not tarnishing the brand. And it has done that in spades.
Allen doesn't seek out the media, so for him to appear with defending champion Ryan Moore at TPC Deer Run is meaningful. Allen can't say enough about all the volunteers who helped Deer & Company give back to the community on the Illinois-Iowa border.
It's about the volunteers and about the Birdies for Charity. We used to think a great year was $1 million or $2 million. And you take the last 5 years, the way this community has really turned it up. And, you know, last year, to do $10.5 million in a year when attendance was way down because of the rains and eyeballs on TV were way down because of the Olympics, and then to blow it away a couple million more than the year before, that was the cherry on top.
Tournament director Claire Peterson, a longtime Deer & Company executive, has guided a small team of devoted employees who've helped the John Deere Classic become recognized as Tournament of the Year by the PGA Tour in advance of this milestone 20th anniversary.
The big thing that happened 20 years ago was the new venue, Deere donating land for TPC Deer Run, and then a real emphasis on charity. Out of the $81 million that the tournament has raised over its 47 years, $79 million of that's come in the last 20.
It's been said that leaders define the marketplace, as Deer & Company has done in its industry. And this event continues to do so among some of the finest tournaments in the world. Deere is an official marketing partner of the PGA Tour, another element CEO Sam Allen takes great pride in.
We are very proud of it. We also are proud of what it does for the business. I was actually talking to the commissioner, Jay Monahan, a while back, and we said, well, we've got three out of the four majors with John Deere equipment. We don't have the Masters. He said, no, you have four out of five because the Players is also one of the... I said, yes, Commissioner, I'm sorry, I misspoke. But, you know, to have four of the five major tournaments this year all using John Deere equipment, There's no doubt that our association with the PGA Tour, the John Deere Classic, has been a positive influence on that. So both from a business standpoint as well as from a community standpoint, we're extremely proud of where it's at right now, and we hope to take it a little bit further in the future as well.
Allen, the new commissioner, Jay Monahan, and defending champion Ryan Moore are scheduled to play together in Wednesday's Pro-Am. Moore racked up his fifth career win here last year and can't say enough about the John Deere Classic.
They put on a first-class event. Nice to play in an area with a community that's so involved. And, there's a lot of positives there.
We'll leave you with this year's President's Cup captain, Steve Stricker, who won this tournament back-to-back-to-back and talks about the John Deere Classic transcending the magic that tends to happen on TPC Deer Run.
The people, the community get behind that event tremendously, and it's a special place, and they raise a whole bunch of money for charity, best on tour per capita, I think. So that shows you what this event means to the community and what the community does for the event.
Three-time John Deere Classic champion Steve Stricker. From TPC Deer Run, I'm George McNeely for VOA Sports in Silvis, Illinois.
Thanks, George. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Welcome back, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Sonny. It's good to be back.
I hope you had a nice break.
I did. It was nice to get away on a little vacation, but I missed you and all of our listeners, so I'm glad to be back here talking tennis today.
Yes, I'm guessing the grass courts of Wimbledon might be front and center.
They are indeed for a number of different reasons, but we'll start with the big one from yesterday, Rafael Nadal versus Gilles Muller of Luxembourg, the match that kept going. And going. Muller winning 15-13 in the final set, of course, at all of the majors except for the U.S. Open. You have to win by two games in the final set. So that is the case at Wimbledon. So in that final fifth set, already a marathon match, they had to go into overtime, into extra games, and taking nearly 5 hours to get that match done. Lots of great play from both the players. But here's what Muller had to say about how he kept his cool during this marathon 28-game fifth set.
I told myself, look, I mean, I'm doing the best I can. I'm playing well. Just hang in there, and you're going to get your chances. And got a few of them. Didn't take the first ones, but still kept believing. And, yeah, somehow in the end, I made it.
And Rafael Nadal, you know, has tons of fans around the world. But I think Gilles Muller picked up a lot of fans yesterday with that performance. Fans loved watching those two play. Said that it was an epic match, an epic set, and very high level of tennis from both of them.
High level indeed, Andrew. I know Rafa, very highly regarded for his behavior on and off the court. And some really nice sportsmanship from Nadal, waiting for Muller to collect his things before he left the court.
Yeah, that's one of the nice traditions there at Wimbledon is players tend to wait for the other player, even if they've lost, and they walk off the court together. But a lot of fans noticing that on social media, saying it was really great sportsmanship from Nadal to wait for him there. And fans generally on social media just loved the fact that this game, the match went on for all these games. They said it was the win of a lifetime, and it nearly took a lifetime. One of the many jokes that were going around. People saying that they'll keep playing until there's a new prime minister in the UK that is going to protest. And I like this one. They said when Nadal started, he had a full head of hair. So maybe losing some of that hair because of the stress. Of course, over the years, Nadal's hair has thinned out a little bit. But among all the fans that loved how much tennis was going on, there was one a fan of tennis and one practitioner of tennis who did not like that this game, this match went on for so long, and that was Novak Djokovic, because he was due to take the court after that match wrapped up. So they actually had to reschedule his fourth round match for this morning, which he won in straight sets. So he is through into the quarterfinals. But fans also unhappy that the Djokovic match wasn't moved to center court while Nadal and Muller were playing on court number one. Wimbledon saying that they wanted not to start that match so late, but fans were disappointed. They wanted to get it all done in one day. Unfortunately, they wait the extra day to get that tennis, but no problem for Djokovic this morning.
What else has been trending, who has been trending at Wimbledon, Andrew?
Well, Venus Williams had had a tearful press conference that we talked about with that fatal car accident that she was involved in, where it was said that she was at fault. Well, word had come out now from investigators that she was not at fault in the crash after all. We talked about how that incident might play with her emotions and her focus as she plays there at Wimbledon. Well, it doesn't seem to have any effect at all. She is into the semifinals. Many say that she is the favorite to win. She's actually now the only woman who has won Wimbledon before who is in the women's draw left after Petra Kvitova lost last week. And she's looking to become not just a sixth-time Wimbledon champion, but the oldest woman to win a Grand Slam singles title, a record currently held by none other than her sister Serena Williams. When she won the 2017 Australian Open, she became the oldest woman to win a Grand Slam title. So Venus would do it at age 37.
Wow.
If she wins, she would be the oldest woman to win that title. So that would be quite an accomplishment for her to add to her already very long tennis resume.
Serena, of course, not playing at Wimbledon this year because of her pregnancy. How much inspiration do you think Venus is getting from Serena sort of being on the sidelines this year?
You know, they've talked about that a lot in the past. They say that they're their best friends, toughest competitors. They try to build each other up. They had really nice words at the after the Australian Open, where they talked about being their, you know, biggest fan, and they were cheering for each other. So I think that, you know, it's certainly a motivator for Venus in that regard. I think it's probably a motivator, too, in a bit of a different way, that not having Serena in the draw opens it up for players, including Venus. So she sees, I think, an opportunity there, and she's going to seize on it. If you look at their head-to-head record, Serena definitely has the upper hand, besting Venus quite a few times. So her not in the draw, Venus says, hey, wait a minute, I can take advantage of this and maybe win this thing.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, one of the other big things people are talking about at Wimbledon is the fact that there's very little rain, which has been great because there haven't been many delays. Actually, today, I think, is the first time it's been delayed since the opening day with rain. But the players are not very happy. A lot of them have taken to social media saying that they're falling, getting hurt. The grass is very slick because it's dry. They're sliding into the dirt. Including American Bethany Maddox-Sands had a very scary fall where she dislocated her knee and ruptured a tendon in her knee. So a lot of players saying it's very dangerous. Bethany Maddox-Sands going on social media, she had a very tearful message saying that she's going to work on recovering, but unfortunately she'll be out for a good while. But some scary stuff there for the players in London. And some scary stuff actually with the Tour de France, which is also going on, the other big sporting event going on in Europe. Criticism that the course routes are causing a lot of injuries there. Over the weekend, five riders had to withdraw after crashing, and numerous riders had to go to the hospital, including cycler Richie Porte, who's one of the favorites. He crashed out and broke his collarbone and his hip. He actually put up a message on social media, a video from his hospital bed where he told fans that he's lucky to walk away with minimal injuries, but some really scary stuff there going on in France.
And last week we had another broken collarbone suffered by Mark Cavendish, the British star, and as a result of that, a rider was disqualified. So yeah, lots of crashes going on there in France.
Yeah, lots of injuries. London and France, both of them, a lot of athletes falling and getting hurt. But some that aren't are Marcel Kittel of Germany winning stage 10 on Tuesday. But Britain's Chris Froome still in the lead. He's got about an 18-second lead overall, so still one of the favorites to win this thing. But we'll see. Hopefully he stays healthy. Hopefully he keeps the wheels on the road and doesn't have any incidents. And hopefully it's the rest of the race is a safe one.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Sonny.
And that wraps up the July 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sidrak Franklin. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, the United States Department of State issues its annual Trafficking in Persons Report, or TIP report, which evaluates the anti-trafficking efforts of 187 countries and territories, including the United States. The report measures government efforts in prosecuting traffickers, protecting victims, and preventing the crime. Human trafficking, also known as modern slavery, is a heinous crime that happens almost everywhere and affects virtually everyone. Today, more than 20 million people around the world are victims of human trafficking. Yet globally, governments report fewer than 15,000 prosecutions and 10,000 convictions. Human trafficking is as old as humankind. Regrettably, it's been with us for centuries and centuries. But in the expression of this act, as I read that one line to you, it is our hope that the 21st century will be the last century of human trafficking. And that's what we are all committed to, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at the report's launching ceremony on June 27th.
The consequences of our failure to act in this area has so many other negative impacts around the world. It breeds corruption. It undermines the rule of law. It erodes the core values that underpin a civil society. Transnational criminal networks also, whether they be drug dealers, money launderers, or document forgers, are partly enabled by participating in human trafficking activities as well.
In a letter opening this year's report, Secretary Tillerson said that this year's report focuses on the responsibility of all governments to criminalize human trafficking in all its forms and to prosecute offenders as outlined by the Palermo Protocol, an international treaty on transnational crime. Because trafficking in persons is a global scourge, the United States will partner with governments, civil society, law enforcement groups, and survivors to provide help for those who need our support. Secretary Tillerson also introduced the Program to End Modern Slavery, a new initiative that will increase funding for prosecution, protection, and prevention efforts to reduce the occurrence of modern slavery wherever it is most prevalent. The United States is a leader in the fight against human trafficking. We seek justice for victims and accountability for offenders, wrote Secretary Tillerson. We remain committed to the elimination of human trafficking here and abroad.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll review the 29th African Union Summit that was dominated by discussions on war and conflict, but also talks on investing in the African youth. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.